It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Later this hour, the state cross-country meet is coming up this weekend, and this is the first year that boys and girls are racing the same distance. We'll talk about that change later on. But first, a conversation with poet and novelist Ray Youngbear. He's just released a new collection of poetry, Manifestation Wolverine. It includes many of his previously published collections and newer work as well. He's also a novelist, but beyond his writing, he's done a great deal of work to preserve Meskwaki language and traditions. And Ray Youngbear is here with me today. Hello. Thank you so much for being here.
Hello.
And I know you had an adventure getting here, so I really appreciate you coming in this morning. I want to first ask you about the title of this book, a question that my children have been asking me as I've been carrying the book around, Manifestation Wolverine. What does that mean to you?
Approximately in 2003, my wife and I were standing by the picture window of our home on Highway 30, not far from the Meskwaki Casino, when we were attracted by our coon dog named Engelbert, who was following something as he was coming down the highway ditch, and it happened to be a wolverine-looking animal, I should say, because we didn't know whether for sure or in fact it was a wolverine, other than we seemed to recognize its movements, how it ambled along like a Komodo dragon, and how Engelbert stayed a good 6 to 10 feet away, but not barking, but just quite curious and following it for roughly, I'd say, about 15, 20 yards until it disappeared into a valley we call Gishko Creek on the Meskwaki tribal settlement. So since that time, I've been intrigued by the whole sighting, whether it was something else. It doesn't matter at this stage because my wife and I believe implicitly that it was a wolverine.
And wolverines are not a common sight in Iowa.
No, and one of the things that I toy around with in being a writer is that I hypothesized or imagined that it was probably sent by some deities to explore the Meskwaki settlement and the surrounding region. At that time, there was, I believe, a political turmoil. And my thoughts then as a novelist was to basically assume that it had been sent by a god and that it was a deity rather than an animal that is not normally around here.
Now, in bringing out this collection of poetry, you're publishing work that has been published before. You're also publishing new work and bringing out a comprehensive collection of your poetry over a lifetime of work. How does it feel to have this kind of collection published? I mean, it's something of a retrospective, not just reflecting what you're doing right now. What does that mean to you?
It was something that I wasn't really expecting to engage in right when my literary management group first proposed it a year or so ago. I was somewhat hesitant because I thought, isn't that reserved for a later time? But then I, you know, the more they talked about it, gradually they began convincing me as they were in pursuit of the copyrights for the three books, three previous publications. And then by the time they got them and by the time they said, we have all the rights, and I acquiesced to the fact that I was 63. I'm going to be 65 next month. And so I thought perhaps it is timely. And one of the things that I was apprehensive about initially was the fact that it has poetry from the very get-go of my writing career, written in 1968 and 69, published in 1970. So we're talking about a 19-year-old standing there in the mirror before me, yet I'm 63 years of age. And then it's interesting experience. On the one hand, you want to go back and revise as much as you can, but the fact of the matter is that they were already published 2,000 years ago. So there's barely nothing one can do to erase a stone tablet, as it were.
So digging back into your work that you did write and publish in your upper teens and your 20s, how do you see your evolution as a poet? What did you learn about yourself from looking back?
I think one of the things that I've discovered as I've endeavored to write fiction and nonfiction is the fact that there's a complete, you turn around, you begin with simplistic proclamation type poems of one's identity. And then as you grow older, you begin to experiment more with arranging how the English, how you can rearrange the English language, even though it may not be done in that manner by people who speak it regularly. But from my perspective as a bilingual Meskwaki writer, I view the English language as basically mathematics, and it's just a matter of arranging them in a way so that they can come out with some sort of figure, some sort of message, and so forth. So it's been a great experiment, and then eventually it led to fiction, which was even a greater but tough experiment. And I still view it as an experiment, I think, largely. There was a time when I wanted to dig every word out of a dictionary and then use it because it wasn't used in Tama County, Iowa. And so I decided, that was a route to go. But eventually, as I got older and beginning to study my work more, I realized that it was, you go back to your beginnings, and that oftentimes the most, the best writing is your simplest.
You grew up on the Meskwaki settlement, and the Meskwaki language was actually your first language, right?
Correct.
How unusual was that when you were growing up? I know that there were many forces at work that were pushing young Meskwaki and many young Native Americans not to speak their native languages.
I believe the elementary school on the Meskwaki settlement was the first place where we were introduced to English minimally at home. I came from all Meskwaki-speaking family. And so by the time I got to elementary, it was there that I began learning the English language. Of course, at this stage, I don't really know how it was done, other than the fact that the teachers were there and they were aggressively imploring all students to not speak Meskwaki. And so we complied as much as we could, minimally, because we didn't quite understand what they were saying. And so eventually it was group work. We began figuring out what this word meant and so forth. And as time went on, I found myself going to seventh grade in Montour, Iowa, part of the Tama County school system. And it was there that I began to realize that everything had a purpose in my first 6 or 7 years of schooling. And then I realized that I had Caucasians for classmates, and some of them were quite articulate and intelligent, that made me realize that there was a lot of things I had to do to catch up.
When you first started writing poetry, you wrote in Meskwaki.
Initially, those were some of the things that I did early on. Eventually, it traded off to drafting completely in English, but I think my poems out initially in the Meskwaki language and then attempt to translate those into English. And so that has been an ongoing process from the time I was 18, 19, now at 64. That process continues, and it is my hope one day to completely compose a novel or a book in Meskwaki. And so that's the next big goal that I have for myself.
Before we get much further, would you be willing to read a poem for us?
Yes, it's a unique poem in that it stems from a drive I took one night. I lost my father it was close to Thanksgiving due to an accidental fire, and he was brought here to the University of Iowa Hospital's burn unit, whereby he hung on for several weeks until he passed on. And during one drive in particular, I wanted to compose something based just to keep busy. And, that's one way I deal with stress, which is I go to the computer and work my stress off. And so it was a very stressful time, and this is what resulted from it. But it's an overlaying of several things. Number one, there's UFOs are implied between here and Tama, Iowa. There's a stretch north of Williamsburg that on Highway 6 whereby one time I saw farmers standing out looking over their farm fields, and I think maybe six or seven families were looking out, and I didn't know what they were looking at. Then eventually I began thinking, what if these farmers were actually extraterrestrials and that they were awaiting a mothership to land in a quarry nearby? And so that is a part of this. There's also Blackfeet mythology about constellations, the Big Dipper. They have a story whereby the moon was in pursuit of the sun, and the sun was running ahead of his sons, the seven sons, the Big Dipper. There had been some sort of infidelity and caused by the moon woman with the snake man, and so there was this just continuous run across the sky, so to speak. And so it's an overlaying effect, and it's called Obvious for Stars
and,
Only.
And Ray, we're going to have to read it after a break.
Okay.
So we'll take a short break here in just a moment. When you write poetry now, is it a combination for you? You talk about wanting to write something solely in the Meskwaki language. Do you find yourself switching back and forth within a poem as you're composing?
I think it adds to the flavor and air of a poem if I think in a Meskwaki context and then try to insert English words in there and see what comes out. I think that's the thing that keeps me going rather than just sitting down and drafting and some poem that I have no idea what I'm doing, but I need a foundation, and Meskwaki is it.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking with novelist and poet Ray Youngbear. He's just released a collection of his poetry, previously published work and new work as well. It's called Manifestation Wolverine, and we will be back in just a moment. You're welcome to join the conversation at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Coming up later this hour, a conversation about the state high school cross-country meet. It's coming up this weekend. This is the first year that boys and girls are racing the same distance. But right now, I'm talking with poet and novelist Ray Youngbear. He's just released a new collection of his poetry that spans his career. It's called Manifestation Wolverine. And just before the break, we were just about to hear one of your poems. So again, tell me what the title is and read it for us.
Okay. Obvious for Stars Only is the title. En route to the hotel of medical necessity, we travel Highway 6 again, passing by the rock quarry, which still possesses a haunting, audible deepness. But this road fails in pretending to be lonely and unused because anomalous signs for wayward celestial travelers have been left near farm driveways and fields. They're hallowed markers people won't recognize, nor would they question them unless they knew from experience a wooden cylindrical post balanced atop a dark gray boulder and pointing southeast by northwest is in fact a compass. But it's there, unnoticed, by passers-by and being held by nothing, no cement, no superglue. Only mystery makes it endure harsh elements, including the snow's ethereal weight. Or it's embodied in another sign, like the old corn crib at Four County Corners, which resembles a long-distance runner, frozen for one century in a fall with arms extended to greet the green and red earth while one leg is bent and the other is lifted skyward, aligning itself with the lead star. Of the seven star siblings, he's the son who awaits to cast father's medicine, one of seven gifts empowered to divide the space between them and their now vindictive moon, stopping her briefly with weather or landscape but long enough to flee across the sky, thereby providing a lifetime of reasons for listeners why there's day and night via mythology, the verbal shrine that memorializes everything that took place here and what's taking place now.
Obvious for Stars Only, read by Ray Youngbear. It's in his new collection, Manifestation Wolverine. In deciding what to include in this collection, I realize you went back to previously published work. Were you involved in deciding what among your recent poetry would be included?
Not really, because it was just an all-inclusive endeavor. So everything that I've published to date is included. I have tons of drafts, but whatever was published was what made it through. And then the newer ones are in the back 80 or 70 pages. Those are the ones that I've been writing since the University of Iowa Press published my last book of poems. That was in 2001. And then from that time, I became an adoptive parent with my wife of six children. Three are now quasi-adults. And so that took a lot of time from the publishing element, but the writing continued. It might have been late at night or early in the morning, but I was able to write a lot. Three manuscripts that I'm attempting to get out now. One is this is the first one, Manifestation Wolverine. I'm working on a novel. That one is entitled The Chair Shall Conduct All Meetings. That completes the trilogy for the Black Eagle Child series that started from the University of Iowa Press. And then the Red Earth Chronicles, Essays from Red Earth Drive. It's a nonfiction, all of my essays, photographs, and historic documents. So everything just has to be completed at 65 years of age soon. I'm pressed for time.
And a father of six. That's
correct. Yeah.
You're a busy man. I actually interviewed you a little over a decade ago, and one of the things that we talked about then was part of your work to try to maintain the Meskwaki language and make sure that it remained a living language. Is that something that you feel you and others who care about that have made progress with?
That's a good question, because at this stage, I am drafting my perspectives on the Meskwaki language with relation to the English language and my work with literature. And in the early 70s, let's say 1969, 70, up to 73, when I began reading poetry, I realized that only a handful of Native American writers spoke their language. One, for instance, spoke it, the other one didn't, yet I respected both equally. Is it any different now with regard to Native American writers? I believe there's a resurgence in progress among the grandchildren of all the grandparents who decided years ago to forego the English language teaching to their family because they felt that they wanted their kids to achieve in society. But those same children are now realizing that with linguistic atrophy present, with scholars predicting that from the 300 or so languages that existed, it's going to be whittled down to 50. With that in mind, I believe the younger generation is going back and then learning the language and so forth. My thoughts are, to other Native American writers, that if you can excel with the English language, you can go back and learn your first language. Of course, there's going to be different concepts, different thoughts of approach with my contemporaries, especially those who may not know their language, but nevertheless are best-selling novelists and so forth. But my perspectives are that you need to contribute something back to your society. My way is just to include Meskwaki language as frequently as I can in my work. Remnants of the First Earth, that was published by Grove Atlantic, contains whole dialogues in Meskwake that I enjoyed doing, and it's something that will probably pick up in the next 4 or 5 years in a complete book in Meskwake, hopefully. I think poetry would be one avenue. So those are the things that I'm attempting to do. The Meskwake tribe is currently engaged in preservation for the language. The young people are learning it. The school is bilingual, bicultural, so they're attempting to do that now.
So there, it sounds like there really has been a shift in education. So young people are getting more exposed to the language of their people, of their families. Do you, you have 6 kids, so you probably know a lot of kids. Do you feel like the children of the Meskwake settlement are engaged? Do they want to speak Meskwake?
That's another very good question. It's hard to motivate a child to learn Meskwake when they're engaged in technological aspects in academics. You have the computer, you have the iPhones, and everything about them, music on the radio, on TV, is a deluge of Americanized ideology or whatever. And so it's very hard to find somebody that has a real interest. But oftentimes, out of 10 kids, you'll find 3, if not 4, who are actively pursuing the learning of the Meskwake language. The others are somewhat apprehensive, and hopefully years down the line, they will use their learning, and it'll be an after effect mostly, but it's a complicated, Meskwake is a complicated language, and it's still being studied by scholars because there are so many nuances in the languages that we have that linguistics hasn't completely been studied thoroughly nor understood, because the Meskwake language is quite complicated, and it's something that I can get stuck with for a while, just like the English language. Sometimes I have to consult my wife on simple sentences on should I say this or how does it go? I forgot. And then likewise with the Meskwake language, sometimes the verb goes in front, sometimes the noun in the back, so it switches. And so it's interesting, but it's something that motivates me to keep going in terms of literature.
I'm talking with Ray Youngbear. He's just published a collection of his poetry. It's called Manifestation Wolverine. And one of the things that distinguishes a living language is that the language continues to evolve, of course, to meet the needs of modern society. That's something that drives a lot of linguists crazy because the language keeps changing. Do you feel like Meskwake is changing? Are there words in Meskwake to reflect the technology that surrounds us?
That's a good question again. It's something that I've thought about. I think one of the shortcomings with technology is that the Meskwake tribe, especially the teachers, need to come up with words for an iPhone or even a telephone. One time when I was teaching in South Dakota, there was a young girl who was using her Sioux language or Lakota language in her poetry and eventually got interested in that, her usage. And I met a North Dakota gentleman who shared with me a word for banana in their language, and I said, what does that mean? And he said, curved yellow. And I thought, wow, that's applicable.
Right.
And so it, in the same light, I call a banana shumisa, almost same words, a curved yellow-colored object, and say that's if the teachers can start incorporating and inventing words for, the engine parts would be complicated, but it can be done. I think those are the challenges that lie ahead for teachers of language.
Right. If you don't have the words that reflect your environment, you're not going to speak that language.
Yes.
Of course, in the last 3 decades, there have been a lot of changes with the Meskwaki settlement, with the building of the casino and prosperity that has made a lot of positive changes for the Meskwaki people. Do you feel like those changes have made Meskwaki culture stronger?
Yes, largely because of the fact that there is funding available where there was none. However, the task is to make those funds reflect the intent to preserve language, to teach the children. Oftentimes, what happens from my perspective is that the programs themselves fail because they don't reach out properly to the whole community. So a school, for instance, will focus on the children and so forth, but there's a greater community beyond the school, beyond the casino. You have pockets of different families who are engaged in their own methods of teaching their children at home how they grew up as Meskwakis. And so those are the things that need to be done. But I'm hoping that as the years go on, that the programs from the Meskwaki Settlement School extend beyond the walls that they have. It's commendable, all the work that they've done, but is it complete? I say no. I think there's a lot more work to be done. The classroom is one place, but being home with your children and attempting to communicate with them in the Meskwaki language is important, and I think there has to be some bridge between the school and homes whereby two approaches can work together, and I think the result will be a lot better.
This is something you actually make reference to in one of your poems, but the Meskwaki society is a patrilineal society. And mm-hmm. so to be a member of the tribe, an enrolled member of mm-hmm. the tribe, your father needs to be Meskwaki.
Correct.
So for the children who are Meskwaki on their mother's side, mm-hmm. do you feel like they are also getting the same kind of access to this culture and this education?
Yes, because some of the parents have enrolled their children at the Meskwaki Settlement School with the intent of having their children learn about the Meskwaki aspect, though their fathers may be non-Meskwaki. And oftentimes, from what I've seen, is that the children themselves, especially those who do not have Meskwaki fathers, are often more aggressive in terms of learning, if only just to demonstrate to others that they are far more capable of learning that. Then it's commendable, and I get impressed by young children, by the things they see before them and the challenges, and then jumping over them.
Although they wouldn't have access to the monetary benefits.
Correct. And unfortunately, that is something that we deal with. There are issues currently ongoing oftentimes, because typically a Meskwaki woman will have to wait longer than a Meskwaki man to get housing. It gets somewhat, I guess, challenging for mothers with non-Meskwaki children who have to fend for themselves on the outside, living in apartments and paying extra, versus a Meskwaki man who is oftentimes a recipient to housing. But then, you know, what I've seen with the vast housing projects is that they made so many houses for the men that oftentimes the men had marriages that failed, and then they're living by themselves in a huge house. And so it's something that tribal housing has to think about, to minimize and think about everybody as a whole, and to try to provide housing for Native American women/Meskwaki,
Ray, we're out of time, but thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Ray Young Bear is a poet and a novelist. He's done a great deal of work to keep Meskwaki language and traditions alive. His most recent collection, which features poetry from throughout his career, is Manifestation Wolverine. Coming up in just a moment on Talk of Iowa, we'll talk about the state cross-country meet coming up this weekend and the fact that boys and girls are racing the same distance this year for the first time ever. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.